Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, December 15th, 2014. You're listening to episode 133. My name is Rob. Sitting across the table from me, as usual, is Mr. Jason Slingerland. Howdy.
Hey, hey.
Hey, what's new? What's going on? How's your Christmas shopping going?
I haven't started it yet.
No?
Zero starting.
Zero?
Well, we bought for my wife's parents, her dad and her stepmom already, because we already did Christmas with them last week.
Uh-huh.
Because they live a ways out of town. But other than that, I have not started it at all. Zero progress.
Okay.
I'm proud of that.
So. Yeah, I'm actually in the same boat. My wife went out Black Friday shopping on Black Friday and bought a bunch of clothes for herself. And so I was like, oh, man, you spent a bunch of money. And I want to go Cyber Monday shop. She's like, all right, I don't care. Go ahead. I spent this much money. You go ahead and spend. So I went on Amazon on Cyber Monday and was like poking around. And I ended up ordering Captain America the Winter Soldier on Blu-ray. And I really couldn't find anything else that interested me even a little bit.
Wow. You could have pre-ordered Guardians of the Galaxy on
Blu-ray. I should have. You know, in hindsight, I was like, oh, man, I missed my chance. So, yeah, I should do that.
Now the permission's gone.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, so that's yay Christmas. I don't know. Here's what I'm thinking that I'll get for my wife, and she'll never listen to this, so I can say this right now.
You totally can. Yeah.
So I think I want to get her a pair of those hoodie footy pajamas, you know?
Yeah.
And the fleece pajamas with feet and a hood.
Yeah.
So I think I'm going to get her a pair of those. They're like $70, though.
So what I heard is you guys are furries, or you're looking to get into
not
it. That's
one with,
what I just heard.
Not one with ears on it, man. They sell those, but I'm not going to get that one. No. Yeah, because girls like pajamas, right?
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
Not the traditional kind of pajamas a guy would buy for a girl, but yeah, that's cool. Whatevs. I want you to put more clothes on, honey. That's what I just heard out of that. And let's be furries.
Yeah. Well, hey.
It's taking a bad turn.
Whatever she's interested in, you know, I support her. No, yeah, so I think that's the only idea that I have right now. My brother's birthday is on the 23rd, 2 days before Christmas.
We're recording.
Yeah, so yeah, next time we're going to sit down and record. So that's my brother's birthday every year, and it's kind of crappy that he's born 2 days before Christmas because, you know, he gets it all at once, and then I have to buy him both a Christmas and a birthday present.
Yeah, my dad's birthday is on the 21st, and his dad's birthday was on the 25th, so yeah.
Okay.
I feel you.
Yeah. So for his birthday, I bought him a, found out the store, it's an Atari console, like an old Atari 2600, but it's like a modern case, and it's got like 50-something games built into it.
Nice.
Which is pretty cool. Comes with two controllers, like original-style Atari controllers.
Nice.
I think it's like all scaled down a little bit.
Yeah.
You know? But it's just plug in your TV and turn it on and go. So that's pretty cool. So I got him that. They had Atari, they had Intellivision, they had ColecoVision, and they had Sega Genesis 1. And the Sega Genesis 1 actually has a cartridge port so you can plug in Sega Genesis games to it. So it's got like 25 games built in, and you can plug in all your Genesis games to it.
Wow.
I almost bought that for myself.
Yeah, I still have a bunch of Sega Genesis.
Oh,
games.
Yeah.
I still have a Sega Genesis.
Well, see, that's why I didn't, because I also have a Genesis.
And
in fact,
Super
I have
Nintendo.
Two. I have two of them.
I have the Sega Genesis, Super Nintendo, original PlayStation.
Yeah.
And then a PS3.
I've got an NES, Super NES. I've got a Genesis. I've got two Genesises. I've got a Saturn. I've got a PS1, PS2, and PS3. I haven't turned on that Saturn in a long time. Well, I feel like I had some. Anyway, not important. But I've got a bunch of cool, like, because I worked at Funko Land for like a year.
Okay.
before it turned into Babbage's and turned into GameStop.
Okay.
You know?
At the mall there?
It was actually in across from the mall in that Target parking lot there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. But while working there is how I stocked up a lot of stuff. I got that Saturn for free because it was damaged. It still worked. At least it worked at that time. So right. I got that Saturn, and I got the U-Force for the original NES, which is a motion sensor. It looks like it's like a book that folds open at like a 90-degree angle, and it's got a motion sensor in there. And so you play games by moving your hand around within the field, the electrical field.
But it
field.
Was probably like super ghetto.
Terrible. Yeah. It was terrible. But it was a cool thing. I got a Sega Genesis golf controller. So it's like a golf club with a sensor on it that you, when you swing, it goes over another, like a magnetic plate that you put on the floor. And it you know, senses the motion of your swing and
wow.
momentum and stuff, which is ridiculous and stupid. I got a ton of free games.
Do you have a power glove?
I don't have a power glove. Are you kidding me? No way.
Power glove was the best.
That's super rare.
Yeah.
I don't even know if it's super rare, but that's the kind of thing somebody would trade into a GameStop.
It's true, yeah. You know? I mean, because you could, like, you could just wear it around.
I would, yeah.
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 I mean, still today,
it's so bad.
Do you remember that movie, The Wizard?
Dude, that's what I just quoted.
Oh, was
it? I love the power glove. It's so bad. That's what Lucas says.
Oh.
Yeah. I love The Wizard.
Because they play that guy, and the guy's got a power glove, right?
Yeah. 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 The Wizard is one of the greatest movies ever. I've been to the dinosaurs in that movie.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I've been there.
Well, like The Wizard, I played in the Nintendo Mario World Championships.
Oh, you did?
I didn't qualify.
No.
My cousin qualified for semifinals, and then he lost out.
Oh, that's too bad. Yeah, I love The Wizard. You know what? I think I bought that on VHS, and then I burned a copy of it on DVD. I should see if I can find that on Blu-ray. Maybe I can find it on Laserdisc. I kind of want a copy of that game, that movie, rather, in every possible format of media that I can find. It's a legit good movie.
Yeah.
A good movie about kids on an adventure.
Is Fred Savage in that movie?
Yeah. Fred Savage.
Oh, and then the redhead girl.
I don't know her name,
but she was in tons of movies back then.
She was, yeah.
She got around in the movies.
And Beau Bridges is the dad.
Oh, in nice. That.
Yep.
Who plays the wizard kid?
I don't remember that actor's name.
He's probably nobody.
No, and Christian Slater's in it, too. Christian Slater is so good.
Christian Slater's awesome. Remember Gleaming the Cube?
Gleaming the Cube, that's so familiar.
It's the skateboard movie, dude.
Is that? Okay, yeah.
Where, like, he saves the world with a skateboard.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, man, maybe I haven't seen that.
Like, skateboards under a moving semi. Dude, you have to see that.
Now I need to.
They have a bathtub in their basement that's, like, got the scoopy thing, so they can just, like, it's like a half-pipe bathtub, and they just keep going back and
forth.
For
real?
Yeah.
Wow. Pump Up the Volume was always
was just going to say, man. What about Pump Up the Volume?
That movie is still one of, that was like that movie was saying, this is what the internet's going to be, but it was just like 10 years too early.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because it was, pirate radio, man. No. The internet. Everything, if you cut out the pirate radio thing and make it podcasting on the internet,
yeah,
that movie would play just as well today. Period.
Yeah.
Period.
Well, except for what they would be doing when it'd be illegal.
Well, that's true also, but still it's about standing up to the man, you know, and saying your piece. Yeah.
And being Christian Slater.
Being Christian Slater, dude.
Guy was always awesome.
He's still awesome, even though he's old, wrinkly, and gray now. Yeah. Well, we watched a recent movie of his, A Simple Man. It's not A Simple Man. That's a Coen Brothers movie.
No, I know what you're talking about. The one, He Was a Quiet Man or something.
Yeah, He Was a Quiet Man. Yeah. Yeah.
I read the synopsis for that movie.
Yeah. It was all right.
Sounds jacked up.
It was all right. Yeah. Yeah, it was kind of messed up in a few ways.
Alicia Cuthbert's in that movie, and I refuse to believe she's an actress at all.
Oh, I can't put a face to the name.
She was the girl in the movie, the blonde.
Okay. I don't remember.
Who he liked.
Yeah, I don't remember. Oh, maybe I kind
of
do.
She was like one of the main characters, wasn't she?
No.
Oh.
If she's who I'm thinking of.
Okay. Anyways. Wait,
I guess
she was in 24. Matter. That's the only reason why I know who she is. And she was a terrible actress in that movie, in that show, too.
Yeah, I never watched. I think I watched the first season of 24 and got bored with it. No, I watched like the first half of the first season and was really bored.
You know what you should watch?
What should I watch?
Alias.
Alias?
Have you ever watched that?
Eh.
It's a fun spy thing.
Yeah.
It was J.J. Abrams when he was like a young dude.
Yeah.
Breaking the rules in the TV industry.
Yeah.
Seriously, that's pretty good.
That's all I had to say about it.
Oh. Yeah. I have almost the whole thing on DVD.
Yeah.
You're terrible.
I am. What you been playing?
Yeah, thanks to you, Crossy Road. Crossy Road is consuming my life.
Oh, man, this is the greatest game of all time.
And TC, by the way, is ahead of us again.
I know.
But ahead of TC by like 20 points, Neil Roberts.
All right, go Neil. That's right. Keep TC in his place, man.
Yeah, so I'm up to, my new score is 179.
Yeah,
so,
okay. I'm
142.
142, yeah.
I know where you're at.
Yeah, sure.
Behind me. But your wife is still like 190 something, right?
Something like 194.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's pretty obsessive with it.
It was pretty exciting to me because the gamer I beat you, I also beat our friend Laura. Like, so I went from like having a score of less than 100 to beating both of you in one game. And I was like, good. All right.
It's pretty good. Yeah.
So that makes me think about addictive games, right?
Yeah.
Like, this doesn't happen in the board game realm. You know what I mean? I can play this game over and over and over and over and over and over again, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's because board games are interactive, right? You're playing with more people. Like, Crossy Road is Frogger, basically. That's the game. In case you haven't seen it, by the way, it's Frogger.
Mm-hmm. And if you have an iPhone, get it.
Yeah.
Because it's free, and there's no reason not to, and it will consume your life.
And so why not? And you should keep getting stuff until Neil pointed out, by the way, do you have the snail yet?
Yeah.
The snail is the one to play.
Why do you say that?
He doesn't hop. So he's easier to control.
Like, doesn't mean he moves any faster.
It's visually easier to see him. I'm telling you.
I think it's harder because I can't tell what lane he's in sometimes. Especially if I'm tapping really hard, I'm not sure at what point he's caught up to my taps.
I think that the pros use the snail, and the non pros don't. Neil actually turned me on to the snail. Yeah. So, and he's higher than all of us. So,
well, that's good. Yeah, but no, I disagree with that. I don't like the snail at all. I really like Giddy Goat because he's just so happy when he hops. I really like Giddy Goat.
I also like Lucky Cat.
I don't have Lucky Cat.
He has three legs.
Oh, does he?
Yeah. Actually, the one I was playing for quite a while was Epoch, which is like
he's
that
cool.
game. And he like blows trucks up.
Yeah.
But it doesn't, what stinks is they don't actually go away.
No, right.
It's like he'll blow a tree up in front of you, but it doesn't help you.
Right.
In fact, I died because I was like, oh, I'll just go do that. Oh no.
Yeah. And I mean, I like all the little details about how things change. I just got the zombie today, actually. When he dies, his head falls off.
Nice.
And bounces away. That's pretty cool. But yeah.
The wolf, it's nighttime.
Okay, yeah, the ghost and the gravedigger are at night, too.
Those are harder, I think.
Yeah, that's tough, because it's not lit very well. The vampire, when he moves, he turns into a bat, or maybe it's a swarm of bats. I don't have
him. And when you stop, he just stands there?
Yeah.
Nice.
Which is cool. And the Dark Lord turns all, like red and evil, and everything's on fire.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, I haven't seen that one
That's
yet.
Cool, too.
I mean, I've seen it, because it advertises all the stuff,
right,
but I haven't bought anything.
Yeah.
I just get my free gifts when I get them.
Yeah. No. But that whole concept, I don't. How would you translate that to tabletop games? I don't know that you can. You know, it's just instant gratification.
I think the closest game I've been addicted to that's like a tabletop game. Well, it can be a tabletop game, but is solitaire. Like there was a time when I would nonstop just play solitaire on my phone.
Yeah.
But I would never have done that if it was a tabletop game.
No, because you have to shuffle and deal and all. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's that quick turnaround from, you know, not only is it easy to launch, but when you fail, it's almost instantaneous to start over and try again.
Right. Yeah. Risk actually is the same way for me. I have Risk on my iPhone,
mm-hmm.
and I'll burn that stuff up. I'll play like 4 or 5 games in a row.
Yeah.
Because I can play 4 games in 20 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. I used to do that on my Sega Genesis. I had Risk on that, and I would play 8 games of that in a row.
Yep.
Because it was just so fast and simple.
Right.
And
gratifying to take over the world.
Yeah, like 8 times in a row. Yeah, and Christine was that way with Ticket to Ride on her phone, and Crossy Road finally broke her of that.
Now she just plays Crossy Road every day?
Yeah, yeah. She'll put in, you know, she'll play it the whole drive to work and the whole drive home from work. And
that's funny.
Yeah.
So you get to listen to her swearing about not doing well at Crossy
Road. I turn on the radio and I ignore her.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, hey, let's talk about stuff.
Yeah.
So something happened today on Kickstarter, the day we're recording this.
Yeah, it sure did. This is our feature of the week, I guess.
And this kind of came out of nowhere. We actually had another feature planned, which will be convenient when we tell you what's happening next episode. Something happened on Kickstarter today, and we're only going to talk about it because I know they're going to talk about it. But we saw a Kickstarter get canceled today.
Yeah.
From a bigger company. Mm-hmm. And we were kind of surprised by that. It was going to fund. It was on track to fund. I had been watching it at Kickstarter, but it was going slower than some of theirs.
How far along into the campaign was it?
There were 5 days left.
Okay.
But it was guaranteed to fund.
Yeah, it was real close.
I would have bet $1 million it was going to fund.
Yeah.
But usually their Kickstarters just burn it
way
up,
over right? fund in the first couple of days.
And the game looks awesome. Everybody that I've talked to who's played the game says the game is awesome. Uh-huh.
I had questions about the theme choice, but.
Right. And I think, I mean, some people could have, but I mean, yeah. there were 597 backers. So clearly people weren't having trouble. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So anyways, so I guess, long story short, what we thought was interesting about that was, I think this is the first time that's ever happened to them, but it's not the first time we've seen it on a Kickstarter, but this is the first time where we saw it with a company where we were like, whoa.
Like a big name company that everybody listening to this show probably is very familiar with them and many of their games.
And you probably already know which one it is. We're just not going to name names because,
you know,
it's not about them.
It's not about them.
It's about what that means.
Right.
You know, when Rob and I have talked for a while about, I think a few times at least on the show, mm-hmm. about like, what's up with Kickstarter? Like, is it going away? Is it going to last forever? How is it going to work? And, you know, 2014 is way lower across the board.
And I read stats about that months ago, and I tried to find them again, and I just couldn't put my finger on it today before we talked about this tonight.
But I know they're less compared mm-hmm. to last year. 2013 was a really good year for Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. I mean, there have been some big Kickstarters this year. Thinking of like AJ's Hostage Negotiator, which
it did real well,
blew everybody out of the water because it was a solo game. We had no idea what was going to happen mm-hmm. with it. But I guess now, so what does this mean for Kickstarter? Does it, you know, is this, it could, I mean, is this just a fluke? Is it bad timing compounded with maybe a theme that some people didn't identify with? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I don't yeah. know.
What can we learn about the Kickstarter market from these observations? So what I'm thinking, and when we're talking about the Kickstarter market, we're talking about the tabletop gaming.
Yeah, because
you know, because
we don't care about the rest of
it. We don't care about it. We don't know anything about it. We don't watch it. Right. You know, we don't right. watch it.
I mean, I've backed some other things.
Sure, so have I.
Snapraise, yeah. But
very cool. But we don't. We're not actively right. looking at this stuff right. fairly regularly.
And we're not, you know, like, it doesn't matter to us because it's not going to affect us. Yeah.
So the tabletop market on Kickstarter. So what some things that we've seen happen in the last year to year and a half, you know, because right. Obviously, you know, my concerns with this stuff started back in 2013. And the biggest headline was the story about the Doom that came to Atlantic City. And you remember that story, right?
That was the game that
made buckets of money. I don't remember what the final target was, the final.
And then they were like, we're not going to do this game.
Yeah. And then they sat on it for a little while. And again, simplifying the story, they right. sat on it for a while and they got about halfway through production. And then one day the publisher just announced, yeah, sorry guys, I spent all that money already. I'm not going to release your game. I'll try and pay you back. And like the designer was completely out of loop, had no idea that this was even happening.
Is that the other one that the other company then picked up?
And then the other company, I don't recall what company that was.
I think it was last year this happened. Was that early this year?
I want to say it was early 14.
Okay. Well, either way, I mean.
But it's within that year and a half window that I'm talking about, you know?
Right.
That was a big, high profile failure there, you right. know? So that plus we've seen tons and tons of games miss their delivery dates by a lot.
Right, right, right.
By a lot.
Well, the other thing that I've noticed is I saw two other companies recently with Kickstarters, one of which had one that I don't know if it was different or not up to par or what, but they barely funded.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I've seen some other companies that continually struggle that are bigger companies even, but they usually have pretty high goals, and I know that can be really tough. And so, you know, those high goals, I think sometimes are daunting, but with this company we've been watching today, that's not the case. They set a high goal, they hit it like in 4 days, and then they make a ton more money off it. You know what I mean? Like they sell like 1,000 copies. So, you know, I'm not sure, but it's like, it feels like, I don't know. I feel like now it's different. You know what I mean?
What I think we're seeing is that 2012 and 2013, this was all kind of still a new and exciting idea. When did Kickstarter start? Did that start in 2010?
Well, I think 2011, 2010 and 11. Well, when did we start recording the podcast?
That was in 12.
So I always 2011 when tabletop started.
Yeah. Okay.
Like,
I think you're right.
That was back when you'd like put a Kickstarter, you make like $100,000. Like,
yeah.
Because it was like, oh, it's a game.
Yeah. So it was probably 2007, 2008 is when all this Kickstarter stuff started going. And yeah, so we got into this in 12, and it was going gangbusters. And I kind of feel like 13 was a peak because that's when the newness and excitement of it wore off. And I wonder if maybe people started realizing this is not, you know, pre-order. guys in their basements who are just doing their passion projects necessarily. Right. It's not an automatic pre-order. Some people are realizing that there are people who've built their entire business around this Kickstarter model, and you know, maybe it's not as exciting. Maybe it's not as good a deal as they thought that it might be. You're not getting the same kind of innovation that you might have thought that you were going to get otherwise.
And I've heard people complain about that. People complain like Kickstarter was supposed to be that place where you could fund weird games that you couldn't bring to market any other way.
Yeah.
But I mean, I also feel like smaller companies who don't have the money to front $30,000 to print a game, like I completely understand that they are using Kickstarter, right? Because that's what it's for, in my opinion, too. Like you want to make a game and have people turn that into a business model? Absolutely. I don't think that's wrong. I think if you're a company that has enough money, like if you're AEG, mm-hmm. you have no business putting stuff on Kickstarter. Yeah. Why? Because why would you? You know what yeah. I mean? I mean, yeah. you've got plenty of...
Well, and see, what I'm saying is I don't think that it's a bad thing, and I don't think it's cheating or anything like that. I mean, if that's how you want to run your business, that's fine. I mean, I wouldn't run a business that way because that sounds so volatile to me and it's terrifying.
It sounds terrifying.
You know,
sure
but
does.
But I think Kickstarter as a company presents itself right. as that way to help passionate people fund their big ideas and get started in with new crazy outlandish stuff. That's right. what Kickstarter wants to promote.
Right.
And that's
not always the reality.
And that's not always the reality of it. And so I think that's been kind of damaging. And then of course, but I think above all else, number one is what I said before, that just deliveries are not happening.
Yeah, I mean, most of the companies, I think, are coming through, but it's there have been some so notable ones that have been... I mean, like, GameSalute. Like, let's just point it out. I mean,
sure.
GameSalute has been slow on delivering a lot of games.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying they're not going to deliver them, but I mean, I've heard from people that, you know, and they just are consistently late. I mean, some games up mm-hmm. to 2 years late. I mean, there's a whole thread on BGG about it. It's not a secret.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not even dogging the company. I'm just saying, like, that's a reality. And mm-hmm. they're a headline company.
Yeah.
You know, and now they're a headline company that's continually late. So
I mean, you can forgive somebody, a small publisher or a self-publisher, by right. saying, your first game, you underestimated your production times. That right. kind of stuff happens. But when this is your fourth, fifth game that you've put on a Kickstarter, and you're 4, 5, 6, 8 months late on delivery.
Right.
That's not cool.
I think games that are 3 months late, like, I get it. Like, you can plan on shipping times and then you can have to look at proofs 4 times instead of 2.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I mean, you're dealing with places in China, which means the boat rides a long time back. You know what I mean? And they do come by boat
mm-hmm.
Cause that's the cheapest way to ship them.
Yeah.
That's cost effective. But yeah, I mean, when you're consistently 1 to 2 years behind on your games, yeah, you're doing something wrong.
It's not
right?
okay.
But the other thing that I think is a big deal is just market saturation.
Yeah.
You know, we know plenty of people who are friends of ours who have kind of sworn off Kickstarter.
Myself included.
Yeah. I mean, you do hardly anything on Kickstarter anymore. I mean, it takes a lot for you to mm-hmm. want to use
the
Kickstarter.
Last Kickstarter I backed was Unpub so that I could get a ticket.
Right.
And
you did that because that's how you could get
a ticket. That's how you get a ticket to Unpub. And right. before that, I think the last thing I backed, I believe, was Mobtown.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Which, honestly, I don't have yet.
Right. Yeah, that's true. Which is not in no way a reflection on Mr. Divine.
No.
And you're not complaining. It's
not
just
the designer. And, you know, and I
but that's
just
another company that puts a lot of games out.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can see why if you're somebody who habitually backs someone, habitually is a bad word because that sounds bad, consistently backs a company, right?
Yeah.
And they have 4 games outstanding. And you backed all those games, I could see you being like, maybe I'm not going to back this one. But on that same note, mm-hmm. I can also see you saying, but they always come through. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it could go either way. For me, I back a lot less games on Kickstarter than I used to. I still back more than you, but obviously, but I back a lot less. And now I have to, like, there was a game recently that was out there, and I almost backed it,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't. And it funded fine. It did, and I played the game, and I know the designer, and I tried it, and it was a fun game. But, like, it kind of comes down to how often am I going to play this game?
Sure,
you know what I mean. And I've been backing more games on Kickstarter and buying less games at Gen Con, and I kind of realized this year at Gen Con, that's not as fun. Like, I like buying games at Gen Con. You know what I mean? I like coming home with a haul that I can then turn around and play
right away,
because I found, like, there was the first game I ever backed on Kickstarter mm-hmm. was Garden Dice.
Yeah.
I've still never played that game. I haven't. He delivered. It was a solo dude, published it on his own.
Yeah.
I've heard it's a great game. Mm-hmm. They put an expansion out, even. I've seen it at Fanfare.
Mm-hmm.
I've never played the game. It just sits on my shelf. I want to play it. I plan on bringing it out at a game night, but then part of me is like, gosh, I have to learn this game now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I have all these other games I already know how to play. I could just teach people who've never played them, and that would be fun too. So that's just a side note, but you know, I do think market saturation is a big deal.
Sure.
And consistently, like I said, I know people. I bet I can name 6 people who've told me, I don't back Kickstarter anymore. And these are people that back a lot of Kickstarters.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and, you know, those people are just stepping back because And a lot of them have said because things take forever to get, you know, mm-hmm. or they're not up to the quality I expected. Now, some companies, that's not true. There are some companies that consistently put out high quality games.
Sure.
So, yeah. Including the one that had to cancel their Kickstarter today. So, right. But that doesn't always, you know, mean mm-hmm. you're going to get all the backers you need. Yeah. So,
I think the events of today that we're recording this, I think this is kind of a mile marker in
Kickstarter history.
Yeah, well, I was trying to think of a different way to say that, but I mean a turning point, or I don't want to say turning point either. It's a mile marker. It's a specific moment that we can probably point to in the future to say this marked some kind of a change
right.
for tabletop Kickstarter stuff.
Right. And this, I mean, it's one of those things that makes me nervous. I got a game going to Kickstarter next year, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, I want to see it do well. And, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. At least with AJ, I mean, he's delivered on time with his stuff. He's,
yeah.
you know, he's mm-hmm. never had to cancel or had a Kickstarter fail. I mean, mm-hmm. You know, and it's one thing that's interesting to me is the difference between canceling a Kickstarter and letting Kickstarter fail. You know, and reading the notes, the backer notes that they put out for the one that was canceled today,
mm-hmm.
I mean, they said right in there, we were going to fund. We understand we were going to fund.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, so many people have come to expect, you know, a half dozen stretch goals, right?
Yeah.
And they know they could hit those in a probably a different time of year with, like, a reformatted Kickstarter. So, it's interesting to me to think, like, we stopped it because it could do better. It could do better for the fans. It could do better for the designer, yeah. for the company.
Yeah.
Which I think it's totally respectable to do that.
Oh, sure, sure, sure. Yeah.
You know, and I'm confident that that company did the research and it was the right decision to make.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so many times you see Kickstarters canceled because they're going to fail and a company would rather have a canceled on their thing. Mm-hmm. Like I challenge you, look back at some, like, listeners, look back at some companies, pick some companies, you know, and look back at their, like, go, like, they'll say they've had 10, 15 projects. Click on that list and look, and you'll mm-hmm. be surprised of some of the ones that have canceled projects back in their infancy, and they yeah. canceled those projects, I promise you, because they were going to fail,
right.
you know? It's like I said, this is the first project I've seen that would have funded that they canceled because they knew it could do better, mm-hmm. you know? And I think that attests to that company's quality, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they're like, no, we do better than
this
for
this game.
It's not gonna
be good enough. Yeah, right.
You know, and I think that's cool. But part of that, I think, comes from the fact that, like, we know that setting a realistic goal for your Kickstarter is not always possible, right? Like, you can yeah. set a goal for 20,000 and fund quickly. Well, let's say you could set a goal for 10,000 and fund mm-hmm. super fast, right?
Right.
Or you could set a goal for 20,000, which is what you actually need to print the game.
Mm-hmm. And you might not make it.
And you could set a goal for 25,000, which is printing the game with really nice stuff, which is a game you want to make,
mm-hmm.
but you're not going to do that because at 25,000, it might fail.
Yeah.
You know, so it's, I don't know, that's interesting to me. And I feel like it's us, it's the buyers of Kickstarter that have made the publishers be that way, right? Mm-hmm. Because we've
for sure.
shown them that as a trend, we back winners, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, that Kickstarter's not gonna make it. I'm not gonna back it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so, I mean, that's just the way the market has turned out
right.
to work, you know? And it's not that we decided to do it that way. It's just
the mob did decide to do it that way.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the mob yeah. likes to back winners.
Sure,
that's
sure.
how it is.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's an interesting thing to think about. So let me ask you this question. As a guy who has done a successful Kickstarter on his own, to publish his own game, and has one coming up
right.
soon, hopefully in sooner than, rather than later, on Kickstarter for a game with another publisher, with Kickstarter being the way it is right now, would you consider self-publishing again through another game through Kickstarter?
I don't know. Probably not. Like, not in the next 6 months to a year.
Mm-hmm.
I'd want to see how things played out. I mean, yeah, I don't know. I mean, who am I to get a game published now, right? I mean,
well,
you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know that if I was going to publish another game, I would not try and publish a game that I could not publish with a $5,000 goal.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, I can't promise myself that I could make that, more than that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, last time we did 7,000 and we made like 7,100,
mm-hmm.
like 2 hours before it ended.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I would certainly set the goal lower. Mm-hmm. I think if anything I ever try to self-publish, I would self-publish like a micro game. Something like Tagmeyer does, where Tagmeyer's like putting micro games out there. Goals are like $2,000 to $5,000. He knows he's going to make it.
Mm-hmm.
Because heck, the last time he put out his storyteller cards, it took forever for those to finally fund. And they're awesome. And I'm glad it funded, and I'm glad I could be a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But like, it was a slow roll to get there, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas his first one wasn't. And this, what's funny is the second one had more options, more stuff. And the first one funded faster because it was a different climate in Kickstarter, I think. That's my opinion of it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? I agree with that.
So you can take something with better quality, more options, and somehow still like have a harder time funding than you could a year and a half ago with easier stuff.
Yeah, the market has changed.
So it's just, it's weird.
You know, and oddly enough, I feel like the kinds of games that I like to imagine myself publishing maybe would have a better chance now. Because you know how much I like small games and I like weird things.
Yep.
And so I feel like maybe there's an opportunity there for the market, the people looking at Kickstarter every day are looking for something new and different and small and weird. And so I kind of feel like maybe now's a better time than ever for me to actually seriously consider doing a Kickstarter.
Right, and especially if you're going to stick to the idea of small, weird game that you can produce with low funding goal.
Not more than like a 54-card deck of cards, you know?
Absolutely.
With a low goal, right. Yeah. So I think it's interesting, and that's been rolling around in my brain, you know?
Right.
So, yeah, it's weird.
Right. It'd be your first Kickstarter, and if you don't care if you fail, you just if it fails, no big deal. You just don't do it again, right?
Yeah, right.
So,
yeah, it's an interesting experiment. I have a couple of things in mind that I'm considering. I think you know what I'm thinking about.
I do.
I don't want to say on the show, though, just in case I get someone's hopes up.
Yeah, we do that sometimes, listeners. We're sorry.
Yeah.
So, well, hey, this was a good discussion, though.
I think so.
Yeah, so... And,
you know, give us your thoughts, guys out there, guys and girls. What do you think about the current climate on Kickstarter? What do you see any trends? Do you see any changes? Can you point to specific mile markers, like I just mentioned, things that where you think maybe something changed sooner than we saw it? Do you think we're all wrong? We would really, I would really like to start a bigger conversation about this, honestly.
Yeah, me too.
So if anybody out there has thoughts or opinions, please send them in to us, and we'll read it all and talk about some more. Because I think this is a topic that really is kind of important to us.
Yeah, and I think
important to a lot of our listeners.
Yeah, let's get a lot of feedback on this, and maybe next year, beginning of next year, which is pretty close now.
Yeah,
we can do another show where we kind of talk through some people's feedback on it and see what people think.
Yeah,
so we'd love to. That would be worthwhile. So
yeah,
let's do that.
Yeah.
So send us an email or give us a call or something, and that'd be great. Mm-hmm. So tell us we're wrong. We love when you guys do that. So
yeah, because we're wrong all the time.
It happens a lot,
right?
Even more than you guys realize, because.
Because I cut out a lot of crap.
Yeah, we're wrong about more than you know.
Yeah, all the time. Yeah, so I guess moving on then, eh?
Yeah, Rob's going to pitch a game.
I am going to pitch a game. This is one, actually, if you guys follow me on Twitter, you've seen me talking about it already on Twitter.
And maybe played it already.
Maybe played it. I only got feedback from one person that I will talk about at the end of this. This is one of those things that just kind of has been bouncing around in the back of my head for a long time. And just recently, it just sort of clicked in a weird way that I was ready to make something happen. So going all the way back to Damsels in Distress. In fact, I mentioned that the other day, I think on my last pitch, talking about Custard Pie and how you could use the 7-card action deck to decide what you do.
Right.
So it was in my brain. It was fresh.
I mean, Damsels in Distress, that's OG BTG. I mean, really.
Oh, yeah. That's first 10 episodes, I think.
Yeah.
First, maybe even first like five or six episodes.
Was that your first pitch or no?
It was not my first. It was probably my second or third pitch, though. You're going to look it up while I'm talking?
I'm going to
look it up
while you're talking. All right. I mean, what else made me listen to you?
Yeah. I mean, you already know what I'm about to say anyway.
I've played the game.
So the feature, just to talk about this again, Damsel in Distress, one of the things that I liked best about that game, and I still really like that game a lot, but one of the things I liked best was that every player had a 7-card deck that they would use to take every action in the game. And on their turn, they would choose 3 cards and play them face up and play them in order to take some action. Okay. And then at the end of that turn, they would put those 3 cards aside as into kind of a discard pile.
Mm-hmm.
And then on their next turn, they would have 4 cards left in their hand. and they would play three more cards from their hand to take three more actions. So they have one card left in their hand now of that original seven. Okay. At the end of that round, they pick up the three they used in their first turn, discard the three they just played in this new turn, and now for turn number three, they have four cards again. The three that they originally played plus one extra one that was left over. Okay. And basically the game then is played by cycling through those cards, and it's kind of a really focused, simplified hand management idea.
Right.
Where you're trying to decide, you know, if I'm going to use this card now, I need to remember I can't use it on my next turn. I'll have it the next time. What do I want to carry over just in case? So it presented some interesting decisions. And I enjoyed that a lot about Damsels. And I wanted to reuse that for a while. So after that Custard Pie pitch, I had that in my brain. And I was watching a video on YouTube. I think it was actually the new Street Fighter. The Street Fighter V coming out has been announced. There's a little bit of a gameplay trailer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I was thinking about fighting games, and I thought, I wonder, because fighting games can be ridiculously complex, but some of them kind of, to some degree, just break down to attack high, attack middle, attack low, and block, you know?
Right.
Because most controllers, you have four buttons on them, you know? Attack high, attack low, attack middle, and block. And there's other things, you know, jump and dodge and whatever. But kind of fundamentally, that's an idea there. And I thought, well, if I could make it that simple, could I do that with my seven-card hand management system there?
Right.
So that's kind of where I'm going with this. Right now, I'm just calling it fighting game because I don't have any kind of a better title for it. grab my notes.
You have notes for this?
Just to make sure.
You literally just told us about the entire game.
Well, so I need to make sure I'm specific. So this is a two-player game, all right? Two-player game. Each player has seven cards, and that means the whole game is 14 cards, okay? That is the whole game. And there's an addition to that I'll talk about in a minute. The seven cards, you have three basic attack cards that are high, middle, and low. There's a power attack card. There's two block cards, one that allows you to block high and middle, the other one allows you to block middle and low, and then there's a dodge card, okay? So if you ever hit somebody with a basic attack, one of the high, middle, or low attacks, they're going to lose one hit point. If you hit them with a power attack, they're going to lose two hit points. But if you can block a regular attack with a regular block card, you avoid that one damage. If you block a power attack, you're going to take one damage instead of two.
Right.
Dodge allows you to dodge anything. Anything that comes out, you can dodge on that round. The one caveat being that, you know, in a fighting game, if you're blocking, you can block, but you're just going to take less damage and avoid a bunch of negative effects from a big power hit or something.
Right.
You're still going to take a little bit of damage. So if you end up blocking two attacks in one round, you're still going to lose one hit point at the end of the round. Okay. Now, the game is played in a series of rounds. Each round is made up of three cards from each player, and those are played in pairs. So for example, I would play one card down to be my first, let's say, attack, and then Jason, if you're player two, then you play one card in response to me. And that I'm calling that an advance. So an advance is when we each play a card against each other. There are three advances per round, total of six cards played per round, three from each player. At the end of that round, those six cards are set aside to your respective discard piles, and mm-hmm. then you keep going from there. Now, to further detail that out, the first advance, I'm player one, you're player two. I play the first card, you play the second card. That ends the first advance. Now we swap order. So an advance number two in the round, you play the first card, I play the second card.
Well, you play the first, I play the second and third, right?
Well, that's the idea, yeah. Right? So I'm going to play one, you're going to play one, two, then I'm going to play two, three, and then you're going to play three.
Right.
And then in round two, we swap that order.
Right.
That's the idea. Okay. I don't know if this is making a lot of sense to people out there. Guess what? I already have Britain Play ready to go.
You do.
If you're interested, you're welcome to give it a try. We'll get a link in the show notes.
Yeah. Yeah. Plus, I'm sure you can tweet it again.
Yeah. Yeah, I sure will. It's really, really simple. Everybody has six hit points. You play until you run out of hit points. So somebody runs out of hit points.
You play a game super fast. We played two or three games at lunch without breaking a sweat.
Yeah, 10 minutes, yeah. Maybe less. Yeah. So really, really simple. Okay. So we did that playtest. I was very pleased with it, But it's what we've talked about before. It's a perfect information game, right?
Right.
There's no randomness. It's all, everybody starts with the exact same information, and it's a matter of making decisions about what you want to play when. Because there's so few cards, it's really easy to count cards and think about what your guy's going to play next, what your opponent's going to play next. You had the suggestion to mix it up a little bit, and because it's only 14 cards right now, and a standard card sheet is 18 cards. Your suggestion, which I thought was a great one, was to add some extra features or some status effect cards.
Right.
So those would be cards that would come up at the beginning of a round and would change the way that round is played, and only that right. round. And so some of the ideas here, I labeled one a recover card. And so when that's out during the round, if one player can play a block against a dodge, that block allows you to recover one hit point.
Just against a dodge, not against another block?
That's what I wrote it in there. I mean, that could be expanded. Right. But yeah, because if it's a block against a block, then you're both, then you would both get a hit point. And I kind of wanted to encourage it to only be one guy getting a hit point.
Okay, that makes sense.
Another idea, you're going to any block damage you would take at the end of the round. So, you know, I'm going to block your hit points, and I don't take it in the middle of a round, but at the end of the round, I still take all that damage.
Right.
At the end of the round.
So if I can knock you out before the end of the round.
Right. Let's see, next one, a power attack. This was a really good suggestion that you had. Power attack, instead of doing 2 damage, it does 3 damage, but the person doing it has to take 2 damage
right.
when he or she is going to use it.
So if you have a lead, works real well.
Right.
So, and if you have a block, it's only going to block 1 damage, and it's going to push 2 over.
Right, but you're also going to take 2 when you do that. Right. It's like overextending yourself. And then
what happens if we both take damage at the same time? Like, attacker wins? Is that how that works?
If you both... So, damage is scored at the end of each advance, not at the end of the round.
Right.
So if we both deal damage to each other in the same advance... So here's how I had that structured. Okay, so let's say you attack me... And your attack takes down my last hit point.
Uh-huh.
Okay, if I can play a block or a dodge to avoid that, then the round continues. But if I don't have the option to play a block or dodge, if all I can do is attack you back, then that's game over.
So here's what I'm saying. I play that fancy power attack that does 3 damage and I take 2.
Yeah,
I'm at 2 hit points. You're at 3.
Mm-hmm.
So
that would be a draw.
Okay, so it's not attacker wins.
Right, that would be a draw because you killed yourself to kill me.
Okay.
And that you didn't win then.
I see. So if I play a punch
mm-hmm.
and to do 1 damage, you have 1 hit point left, but so do I,
mm-hmm.
and you throw a punch down as well,
mm-hmm.
you get knocked out, not me.
Right.
Okay. That makes sense.
Likewise, if we get to the third advance, and by totaling in the extra block damage at the end of the round, if that means that we're both dead after advance number 3, then that's also a draw.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, because you have to survive the fight.
Right. And you can play the game. Again, really fast.
Yeah, sorry, and of course...
What were the other status effect cards?
You know, I don't remember off the top of my head. I don't have my written down in my notes. They're in the print and play, guys, so check it out. So the idea there, the structure that I thought of for that was that round one would be played like a regular game. Round two, you would take those 4 status effect cards, shuffle them up, throw one back in the box, and then you flip over one, the top card. Right. Okay?
So everybody knows what the status effects are. But they don't know which one's coming.
Which 3 are going to come up, right?
Right.
So rounds 2, 3, and 4 are going to have a random status effect in place. You get to round 5, you put the status effects away again, you play round 5 as a regular round.
Right.
And then round 6, you shuffle them up. You're not likely to make it to round 6, no, honestly.
You're not likely to make it to round 5.
It's very, very unlikely.
Very few times made it past round 3.
Yeah, yeah. So I was really very pleased with that. Now, it did become pretty obvious right away, though, that there is kind of an optimal way to play without status cards.
Right.
And in fact, Andy Lennox did play testing for me a little bit, and he laid a lot of that out for me, and we talked it through, and he's absolutely right about that. So the first suggestion that he had was that rather than playing the cards face up, what if you each played a card face down and then revealed what the advance action was?
Right.
That adds some more unpredictability into it, adds the need to kind of guess what your opponent's going to do. The other thought that he had is that what if you also at the start of the game, you shuffle your 7 cards and randomly take 3 and set them aside to your discard pile. So you start the game with 4 random cards.
I actually like that.
I think that's a great idea.
I don't like the playing face down because it feels like, what if your theme is fighting, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what are the odds in a fight we're accidentally both going to block at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
That's dumb. That doesn't happen.
Well, it's true.
What's funny is, like, when you first described this game to me, I thought that's how we were going to play it. And I was like, I'm not a real big fan of that. And then you were like, no, we do it this way. And I was like, oh, hey, that's great.
Okay.
So only because it's a strategy game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a lot less strategy if you don't know what your opponent's playing. But what Andy said, the other part is genius. Discard three. Mm-hmm. Because now it's not perfect information. Now it's, I don't know what four cards you have. Mm-hmm. And you don't know what four cards I have. So I might try and, my optimal strategy then might be to play attack high.
Yeah.
Because if you lost your attack high card, you're getting hit.
Mm-hmm.
So
here's another idea. This is one that I had, is that the dodge card, what if the dodge could also be played as a delay? So if I play the dodge card in reaction to one of your attacks, then it's a dodge. But if I lead an advance with a dodge card, it becomes a delay. And that immediately ends that advance and makes you have to go now, and you start a new advance with a card.
Oh, that's cool, because you're burning a dodge card, which is pricey, because dodge cards are important.
And then it also, though, you're still only going to play three cards each in a round, and so basically the last advance, I'm giving you an advantage, and I can't do anything to defend against the last advance.
But that said, you're going to get to play first twice, right?
Right.
So, because you're going to, that's going to force the opponent to lead, and then you're going to respond, and then you're going to... I think that's cool. That's okay. A neat idea. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think the next playtest, I'm going to try it with dodges structured that way and with the discard three in the start with. And I still haven't even played with status effect cards. So I really need to try it with that too. So we need to do that one day this week at work.
Yeah. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Let's do it up.
So yeah. So fighting game. So the other thing that you and I were talking about was theme. And it occurred to me that this could work as the new Rocket Wreckers.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's brilliant for that, because, like, this simple fighting would be awesome to have people on top of.
Yeah, and the fighting part of Rocket Wreckers is always the weakest part. Representing the two characters having a fight while riding this rocket. But that was always the weakest part. But it was always the most exciting concept in the theme.
Right.
You know? So more of Rocket Wreckers was about, just about hacking the rocket or fixing the rocket. And when it devolved into a fist fight, it was just a little bit lackluster.
Right.
One of the many problems with Rocket Wreckers.
Whereas this is a fun theme,
mm-hmm.
and it's just a fist fight on top of a rocket.
Yeah, and then
you can't get on board with that.
And then the status effect cards would be something to do with a rocket,
Right.
Maneuvers or obstacles or who knows? Who knows? So I'm not sure if I'm 100% committed to that right now, but I kind of like the idea. Also helps that I have some amazing artwork already to go with it.
Right. And you know where you can get more amazing artwork if you needed it?
Right. So,
I think that is awesome. Huge fan of that idea.
Yeah.
So,
that's the idea of the game. So again, listeners, it's out there. We'll have a link in the show notes. We'll make sure there's a link, cause I have a PDF of just the rules alone.
Mm-hmm.
Then I've got a zip file. That's the rules with the cards to print out.
Right.
So we'll make sure we link both of those in the rules if you guys just want to read, or if you want to print it and give it a try. And I would love any feedback that you've got, any suggestions, any reactions. I think as an 18 card game, it's pretty tight. It's pretty simple.
Yeah.
And I don't think it needs to be super complicated for something so small.
Nope. I agree.
And I'd love to really do a tournament of that. I think that'd be so cool.
Yeah.
And I think about this, and this is the kind of game that I could do on Kickstarter,
Yes.
Like, cause it's weird and different and tiny.
And 18 cards.
18 cards could be super cheap to produce, So that's one of the things that I'm thinking about.
I think the biggest thing working against the game is you have to have two dice with it.
We don't have to.
Yeah, but you can't give a game without the dice. It's my least favorite thing ever.
I know.
I still am pissed at the Sentinels guys for that.
I agree. I wouldn't want to do it without dice, but I think that would be like a stretch goal or something, or maybe an upgrade option or something.
Right.
Is dice to go with it. Because I just can't. Because, I mean, 18 cards, you could put that in such a tiny... It's like a booster pack, man.
Yeah. Actually, I wish I had it sitting around here. Tagmire's last Kickstarter.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and the little plastic wallet.
One is the plastic wallet. I've got it. I'll show it to you. It's cool. Like,
yeah.
You could totally do it in something like that.
Yeah,
right.
So that's really appealing to me. But anyway, that's the idea. That's the whole game. That's the pitch. So I'm having fun with it right now. It's It's a really low stakes concept and design, and I've really enjoyed taking a break from Innkeepers and Tea Party and some of the bigger stuff that I've been working on, just to kind of think about something small and simple and just reset my brain. And I've needed to do that for a while.
Yeah.
So I think I'm gonna enjoy doing this and get it somewhere that I'm happy with, and then I'll be super fresh and ready to go to get Innkeepers back in shape for Unpub.
Cool.
Yeah. So I'm happy about
good
that.
Plan.
Yeah.
Good
plan. So we have an email there.
We've got a voicemail here.
Oh, a voicemail. Okay.
From our friend Lanier Wexford. It's hey. A shorter one.
All right.
BG, it's Len. What's going on? Driving to work, listening to this week's episode, and I really was interested and intrigued by the Gold Bricks Not on the Table game. Anyways, I was thinking, because you're talking about it being a social game and, you know, swapping things around, if every player had their own deck of cards and they had, like, a role, but the cards were also used to somehow swap out gold. So the first round, there's an icon on there that allows you to use it for money or somehow some power to swap out for gold bars. And then after the gold bars are gone, the game begins, and then, you know, you can swap out for, like, they have three cards are multi-purpose, like, for, like, four different reasons. Getting gold bars or allowing you to look at someone else's hand or manipulate their information, and then it goes on. The end condition would be the first person to achieve a goal, and you have a gold card, I guess. I don't know. As I talk about it, it slowly the idea is fleeting away, which is what happens when you're driving into work on the expressway. You have a great idea, and then you get off the expressway. All right, dude. Great show. Keep it up, guys. Talk to you later. Bye.
Thanks, Len.
Yeah, we know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Oh, man, it's such a great idea, and then I'm trying to put it into words, and it's all falling.
Yeah.
That's a cool idea. We should talk more about this social game kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, because that was a really fun conversation.
It was.
And he had some good ideas there.
Yeah, yeah. No, those were, like, the idea that everybody has their own small deck of cards.
Yeah, yeah.
I think is a great idea.
And you could even start with one big deck and just deal it all out. So everybody starts with a random selection of cards also. Yep. I think it's a great idea.
Yeah. And he's right. Everybody could start with a role too. Like, I'm the getaway driver. You're this, you're that.
For sure.
You know, I'm Hans Gruber.
It could be like Cash and Guns, but better.
Lots better.
Without the foam guns and screaming.
And yelling Bazinga or whatever they
whatever hear. Whatever it was. Oh gosh. I was so sick of that by the end of Gen Con.
Yeah.
Woo.
Anyway, I think that's all we got for tonight.
Okay, that's enough. So thanks everybody for listening. We really appreciate it. Oh, I have one last thing I want to say. We had a few orders of Finish It come in this week, so thanks.
Whoa, hey.
To anybody out there, any listeners, if you're the ones who bought a copy, we had one sold to Kansas and another one to California, so if that was one of you guys, drop us a line and let me know. I want to give you my personal thanks. So yeah, so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email to buildinggamepodcast@gmail.com. You can also check out our website at buildinggamepodcast.com. You can follow us on Twitter @podcastbtg. Jason is @JASlingerlin, and I am @poorly_design. And you can leave us a voicemail at 770-TEL-BTG. If you don't want to call, leave a voicemail. If you're overseas and you or somewhere that you just don't want to make a phone call, you can record it on your home computer and email us a file. That's always fun, too. You can follow us on Facebook. No, like us on Facebook. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes. And as I always say, come on back next week and we'll talk some more, because that's what we do. So good night.
Good night.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios. All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are property of the Building the Game podcast. Next time on Building the Game.
You have to kick up the headphones a notch, if you don't mind. I can hear
nothing. I don't mind at all. Is that better?
No, I can't hear anything still.
No?
Are they even plugged in? Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
Hello. Hey, that's better.
Yeah, is that good?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like there's this magic point where, like, dead, 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 boom, voice and headphones. It's the only reason I record this podcast. I like having my voice in my headphones.